Jaspreet Boparai and Don Nicholson with Greenwashed on RCR, Reality Check Radio.
You're back with RCR Greenwashed with Jaspreet and Don. And recently there was a primary sector conference in Wellington that said its key summit themes were delivering leadership to enhance primary sector resilience, fostering producer confidence through challenging conditions and addressing sector profitability, connecting with markets established and new, harnessing science, innovation and technology for a productive future, weaving a sustainable future for New Zealand's primary sector, developing policies to enable rural communities to thrive and progress, and bringing together rural and urban communities behind the primary sector. Now, to talk about that today, we have a participant of that summit, Bryce McKenzie. He was on our show a few weeks ago, and we said we'd want an update on this. Did you feel the love there, Bryce? Did you feel that everything business as usual, nothing to see here? It was just another conference, or did you find some good key points come out of it?
Oh, look, Don, it's pretty much same old, I guess, when you go to them. I noted you had Jane Smith on your program recently, and she said once you get into Wellington, and you know, it's very easy to actually get taken in by all the rhetoric that goes on there, and you just have to get away from it to actually get a grounding again. Look, they're all in the same boat, Don. And I mean, a lot of them probably mean well in what they're saying and doing. And some of them do have a great deal of experience. But when it comes back to the basics and the logic of it all, you know, I was really impressed with the Prime Minister's speech, except for the fact that he started off by saying that, you know, you've got to realise that New Zealand agriculture is 50% of New Zealand's emissions. And I'm sitting there wringing my hands saying, well, you know, this is so far out of date now. Why doesn't he just go back to the International Panel on Climate Change's report and see that that's overstated by three to four times. You know, that's the frustration of it all. How do you get this message out so that people understand that even the IPCC doesn't agree with what they're saying? Hard going, Don.
Yeah, hard going, all right. But Jane was right. I mean, you get caught up in it when you're there. And you know, I'm guilty. I put my hand up. I was part of it for a long time. And you do sort of, you know, one conference at a time believe that you're changing the world. And clearly, when you have the cold, hard light of day, you realize that it's just business as usual for most of us. But the sad thing is, as you've just alluded to, the Prime Minister hasn't altered his thinking. But he's not alone. Recently, I saw a page that I had to read time and time and again to make sure I wasn't just missing something. And it had built up agricultural emissions to 80% of the New Zealand inventory. So the opposition to this stuff are hamming it up and making it look a lot worse than, you know, I've got this issue. I'm probably developing it a little bit as I go, Bryce. What is an emissions profile? What the hell is important about that? It's a bureaucrat's wet dream, really. I mean, they've milked this system for about 25 years, and they've got us tied up in knots to the point where now they're talking about businesses having differential banking rates, or mortgage rates, if you don't meet XYZ criteria. But I don't. You start analysing what profiling of emissions is, and if you let the open market decide, you know, how they want to buy or trade goods, that does it. You don't need all that profiling because the most efficient producers and traders will win the day, and it won't be anything. There'll be no need for emissions profiling. But anyway, hey, digressing. We want to hear about that primary sector talk
summit,
fest.
Yeah.
What actually was the key points out of it for you? I mean, I was being a bit smart at the start reading the themes, because it does seem like business as usual, but there has to be some good stuff there.
Oh, yes, it certainly was. And I mean, some of the individual speakers were very good. Our trade negotiator, and I've forgotten his name. I meant to write this down.
Vangelis Vitalis.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, he's got a wealth of experience, and he was good to listen to. He still comes out with some of the same stuff we've heard many times before. And for farmers, it's really hard to get our heads around this fact that we keep getting bashed on emissions. And I mean, a lot of this summit probably was to do with emissions. So yeah, that made it hard going for me, Don, because there's no baseline and you can't get away from it. All of our farming discussion probably ends up back at emissions because we're getting talked about it so much. And as you alluded to with the banks, and we could talk about that in a minute because that's that was really interesting what's been going on there. So it's just another, we just continue to get bashed on.
So yeah. It's not unusual, actually. I mean, this is the same story. Some of us have been talking for 25 years, and yet the other side is just putting this creeping, it's insidious. It creeps annually ever more into your business, and they seem to be winning the day. And as Jaspreet's got a term, I think they're called leeches. Is that right, Jaspreet?
Yes, and parasites.
I used to call them the reef fish. They really do want to have us just left with the bones, the skeleton of the primary sector. But that's a cynical view too, because we still get out of bed. We still make sure our animals do deliver production for us. So what is it that they really want? What is it in the end analysis of all this do they really want? Do they want dominance of the food systems? Do they want us to be... Is that what you think?
Yeah. Oh, look, it's got to be, Don. I really can't think of any other reason why they keep hammering it. It's not like it is. Well, you know, and Jasper, you know as well that we're the most efficient food producers in the world, and to try and put a slow us down or take production away from us is only actually going to add to the world's problems if you think that that is what the problem is. I mean, you can go round and round in circles, and in the finish you come back to it, that what is the actual problem here? Has it been established what it is? Because I think most people realise it hasn't actually been established because there's nothing to establish. So it doesn't matter whether you talk about GWP star, GWP 100, or whatever else there is that really relevant in the way we food production is anyway? It's just an excuse, and the only excuse can be that they're trying to actually get us eating other forms of meat, or it's bigger than that again.
Yeah. And Bryce, we will get into the bank discussion in a moment, as you said. I also saw a post from rural contractors. And have you moved to the dark side here, suddenly accusing Groundswell of having myths and disinformation, all those words we've heard during the COVID times? What happened there? Why was Groundswell being accused of misinformation?
That was in a panel I was on, actually, and that was probably one of the liveliest panels because Dean Williamson, of course, who's the CEO of Farmers Weekly, and myself were on it. And we have a habit of locking horns, I suppose, have done for quite some time now. And okay. Dean's always been concerned that Groundswell, even though we did a great job earlier on, now all we're doing is causing division. And and I've talked to him since this too, he made a statement that Groundswell needs to be responsible for all those people that comment on their social media. So he was really having a good dig at social media. And I was questioning him on how you censor that people have to have a say. Yep. And you have to give them the right to have a say, otherwise they may take it out another way. And what I was meaning by that was that, you know, they may do self-harm, they may harm somebody else. And Dean claims that we picked him up wrong, that we were accusing him of saying that Groundswell spreading disinformation. But he said, no, it was definitely the people on our page. Well, I mean, and he singled out the loyal people. Okay. And I said to him, well, you know, they have as much right as anybody else. And he says, oh, yes, but they're all conspiracy theorists. And I said, well, I don't believe that's right, Don. I mean, who decides what the one source of truth is?
Yes. I know. So, but he didn't go into any more specifics that what he particularly thought were conspiracies, you know?
No. And he got challenged. He did get challenged on that too. But that was the only reference he could come back to, was the loyal people had put different stuff up there. And I said to him, well, you know, who decides what's right and what's wrong? And do you ban everybody that has a differing opinion to what you think? And it gets quite deep. I mean, when you get into it, you start looking at why a media, especially who have had a terrific run over the years by being perhaps the one source of truth, or not being challenged because they couldn't get challenged. How do you challenge a newspaper if you send them an email, nobody else sees it?
Yep.
So once you put it on social media, whether you think it's good or bad or not, the fact is that you get opinions and you get a reading of where the people sit on the subject. So if you stop that, then, I mean, you're controlling what you think is the truth.
Man, that's disappointing. Here, I was hoping that he actually maybe challenged some facts about methane or carbon dioxide or emissions. No, nothing of that sort. And that's what we've seen time and again. Put people in a box, label them something, put them in a group, forget their individualism, and just, you know, hammer them. Mm. Yeah, same old.
Yep. I remember when Federated Farmers decided to set up its own newspaper. It used to have Straight Furrow years ago, and it was about a 20-year gap where we didn't have our own newspaper, and we decided to set it up. And the gentleman you've just mentioned was very annoyed with that. I remember getting grief at a dinner table one night on he was not liking the competition. So maybe there's elements of that in behind this. They don't want to be competitive. They don't like the social media openness. And it is a threat to them. I can accept that it's a threat to them. But, you know, I think what you have done, Bryce, by having that chat was showing them that, yes, the farmers of New Zealand, the people around regional, well, all New Zealand really, want to hear all sides of the story. They don't.
Yeah. Look, Don, we have, and it's well known that we have some people that work in areas for us that are quite outspoken. They don't mince their words, and I'm referring to the likes of Steve Cranston and Jamie McFadden, who, when they're on their subject, which they know the subjects very well, they don't hold back. Mm. And, you know, they're the two that probably get accused more than Laurie and myself even. But I'll stand by those guys because they don't do that without doing the research first. And you can't silence them because they're only sharing what most people or a lot of people are thinking anyway. And very bright people that have studied the same subjects know that they're on track. Otherwise, they wouldn't get any hearing at all.
Yeah. And so we've got a big job to do to keep just prodding the bear effectively because, you know, we haven't been getting the facts out there in the, what you'd perhaps deem the mainstream rural media. There's been the odd snippet and you think, oh, yeah, it's starting to be talked about. You know, a wider remit is starting to be talked about. For instance, the effect of methane in the real atmosphere. But it's still very muted. But you know what, Bryce, I do live in hope that when the worm turns, it'll turn really fast. And I'm not quite sure what it'll take. Will it take tension in the world or something like that? And, you know, so international security is not so great. And all of a sudden, the people that really aren't adding anything to our lives get caught out.
Yeah. Really interesting, Don, because I had a few conversations like that with people that probably were more behind the scenes at PINS. And, you know, it's really interesting because at times I always think by pushing back like this, am I really actually doing more harm than good? Wouldn't it be better to let the whole thing fall over, people starve, and then we could, you know, something major is going to have to happen for people to wake up and realize that this is just a big game and we're the pawns in it. And so, maybe people starving could achieve that.
So, Bryce, if it's any consolation, I spent 25 years or so around Fed Farmers doing this sort of stuff. And I used to have in the back of my brain all the time, I'm just dignifying this damn process that I don't like. I'm dignifying, I'm adding to it. I can't, by resisting and presenting the case, you are just really dignifying the process. Because when you're a bit older, you realize that these people have no intention of stopping their machine going. And they're better at lobbying to make sure the machinery of government assists them than we are, perhaps. So look, it's a cynical view, but it's how it works. And so, you know, good that you've had that thought process as well, that, you know, adding to it or let it all tip over, just let them fill their boots and then see how good it goes. That could
be. Yeah, look, Don. Yeah, and I guess you get the reality jerk back the other way where you see people that are actually struggling and
yes.
they're fighting with the system and you know, that's their life at the minute, and that they're having trouble breaking free of that struggle and they need assistance. So then you go back and try and bat for them again. So, you know, that's a balance you walk all the time, isn't it?
Yep. I you know, Bryce, coming in 2009, slowly in a couple of years, sort of thinking something is not right here, and then being quiet myself, thinking, oh, I remember when Van der Hayden left Wanted or someone, the next person will come. He will see this, something will change. The Dairy NZ CEO changing. Oh, maybe this person is going to say something. And I was very quiet for more than a decade, a dozen years. That's quite an achievement I'm proud of. But then there came a point when it was like, no. So many people have changed. I've watched this for a dozen years. Nobody is speaking up. Nobody is saying out anything. And then you just sort of go for it. And you're like, let the pieces fall where they may. It's a very unsatisfactory, I told you so. Very, very unsatisfactory. But maybe there comes a point where we just let people actually deal with the reality which is heading their way. But the more I speak to people at this point, because the economic hardship is here now, you know, the COVID feel-good era where Jacinda would say, oh, farmers and growers are keeping us going and all of that virtue signaling, that's over. We have reached a point where even a payout with a $8, and for our listeners who are not in the rural sector, that's talking of $8 per kg milk solid. That's about 12 liters of milk, makes 1 kg of milk solid. So at one time, just a few years ago, anything with the $8 in front of it used to be, yay, time for, you know, cheering. And now anything with an eight in front of it, people barely break even in the farming sector. This is what we've come to now. You add to it the interest rates because a whole lot have borrowed quite a bit. And that's where the banks think come. Then I'm leading to that. So it was June when I first got that email, just breathe. It's time to take on the banks and emissions establishment from Groundswell in my email, then follow the rural banking inquiry. Now, last week, you popped up a post after this primary sector summit saying that Rabobank wants your feedback on emissions. And then there's been some sort of games going on. Rabobank took that post down because a whole lot of people went up to it and told them exactly what they thought about their emissions plan. And now it has been reinstated. So Rabobank took the post off, getting too much negative feedback, and now they put it on again. What's going on?
Yeah, look, Jaspreet, that's been a real interesting time. As you explained it exactly right, we put the post up, everything was going well. We know there was a lot of feedback coming in. Next minute, Rabobank took the post down. So we thought, gee, what do we do here? Because people were coming to us saying, look, I'm trying to actually respond to this, can't get the response through because the post's gone. So we thought, well, we'll have to explain it. So we sent another email out straight away saying we apologise, but Rabobank seems to have taken the post down. If you want to make a comment, make it on our page or email them, whatever. But, so anyway, Todd Charteris rung me after he saw the second email. Of course, Todd Charteris is the CEO of Rabobank.
Yep.
And he was very apologetic, but apparently one of our conspiracy theory followers, probably, he didn't say that, that's my words, made a derogatory comment, and their staff went in to delete the comment but deleted the post. So I guess we have to take that on the chin and say, well, you know, I'm not very good at social media, but I've never actually managed to do that myself. But
We'll have to accept that. Yeah. So for listeners who are not following the Rabobank page, or you know, you don't have any borrowings with them, it's a big rural lender here. They've put up this Facebook post saying that earlier this month, we posted about our latest white paper, Maintaining Our Emissions Edge. And in the paper, we acknowledge New Zealand's exported food is already among the world's most emissions efficient. And we encourage all within the value chain to build on this position. So basically, they're telling people we need to go further maintaining our emissions. And I've gone through the white paper. It's not too long. It has a lot of pages. But people are not happy. I see some of the folks you've mentioned, Steve Cranston and others, reply there to Rabobank that, Rabobank, you need to acknowledge that the scope 3 emissions reduction. So scope 3 is behind the farm gate. You know, your producer is now telling you how to do your business if you actually want your product being sold. Scope 3 farm emissions are not a priority for customers. This is being primarily driven from the boardrooms. And that's what it is, isn't it? Isn't that the truth, Bryce, that Steve has written? Customers, yes. The average mom and dad, I can go and stand in a supermarket line today. I always have watched what's in people's trolleys around me. And it's always whatever's on, you know, the value brand or what's on discount, and especially in this economic climate. And yet they keep pushing us. We are already doing our best. How far till you kill the goose that lays the golden egg?
Yeah, exactly right, Jasper. It's and Steve was right on the money with his comments. And, you know, we've had a number of people that have contacted us since, and a number that aren't on social media but through our email have tried to respond to Rabobank. And I've got one response here this morning, and I'll just get it for you. I'm sorry, I should have had it open, from somebody that responded and said, sorry.
Take your time, Bryce. But it's galling that you have banks pushing people who are already doing their best for what? For virtue signaling.
Yeah, and when I read some articles coming out of Europe from the likes of the CEO of Arla, they're saying if there's nothing that farmers can do, we're not going to push them. Yeah, don't do it. We're certainly not going to tax them. And anything that reduces production, we certainly are not going to do that. But that's not what you hear in New Zealand. You have to read foreign media to get that.
Yeah, well, this came in this morning, and it's this person said that I've just sent a message to Rabobank, and I've got this reply back. Message blocked. Your message to nzinfo@rabobank.com has been blocked. See technical details below for more information. So unfortunately for Rabobank, this is upsetting people now, because Todd Chard was called for, as you said, Jasper, he called for comments on his white paper. He wanted people to respond. And we just thought, well, that was good. He had done that. We would get people to respond. And we were quite prepared to take it on the chin if people were backing what he's done. And to be fair, I have had an email today of one person who is backing Rabobank. I've had, I don't know how many emails from people who want banks to stay out of their business, as in their emissions profiling and that sort of thing. And to perhaps take a step back further, we work with Federated Farmers on the interest rate one, and we felt that they perhaps weren't going far enough because they were leaving their emissions out of it. And we thought, well, you know, that's something we can take up because we don't have to be in the room at these things, so we'll push the emission side of it too. But it certainly has stirred a lot of people up, I can assure you of that. I think they feel that we're going into areas we shouldn't be. And that comes back to the old school Thai club. And you, Don, will know better than anybody that circle of so good doers for New Zealand agriculture. Yeah. And they have their own circle. And we definitely sit outside that in a lot of cases. So we continually get picked off for pushing something that's not the old school Thai club narrative.
Mm. Well, and it's, yeah, I thought we'd moved on from that, but, you know, perhaps we haven't. It's interesting. If our listeners are wondering what we're sort of getting at here, I just read from a page of that Rabobank report, and it talks about how Rabobank and McCain teamed up to incentivize regenerative potato growing in Netherlands. And aside from a bit more of the blurb, it says participants have been attracted by finance and non-finance incentives, including price premiums for farmers adhering to the standard of the master or expert level of regenerative agriculture framework and achieving certain regen standards. But here's the kicker, a 1.5% interest rate discount for sustainability related investments, with the discount matched by McCain on equipment purchases, attractive loan terms such as higher loan to value ratios for and longer grace periods, 3-year contracted supply agreements to McCain, and technical support and more. I mean, if you want to tie yourself up in those sorts of agreements, go for your life, but don't make everybody party to it, because there's certainly an offset to this stuff, and it won't be good for everybody else. Well, it's just not the right way to do, in my opinion, to do business. To me, it's very easy for, let's say, McCain's to just have, they talk about price premium, but for how long? And effectively, who pays that in the end? Well, it'll be the consumer, and the people that will go out without in time will be the farmers, who will have cost structures they can't, you know, just can't compete with. So I don't know. It's a way to put more complexity into something that doesn't need to be complex. Sure, have a supply agreement, but don't start giving these incentives about interest rate differentials or something to induce. It just doesn't make sense. And it's not fair on the farmers that can't do what these people want them to do.
Yeah, you're quite right. And I mean, it appears that it could set up bank competition who are pushing this further. And of course, that pushing the green narrative further with the way they incentivize their loans, which really doesn't do particularly young farmers that are in agriculture much good. It just puts more stress on them. And it's not as if it's that easy now to swap banks. And we get a lot of people that give us feedback on that. And we get a lot of feedback from people that are actually really struggling just to meet their interest bills the way they are and are trying to do their best to protect the environment in their business, but finding it difficult to actually function because of this massive debt that they can't pay off hanging over their heads. I think the other thing is that Todd, when I was talking to him, this is Todd Chartres, the CEO of Rabobank, he said that he was disappointed in the way we had worded our post. It made it look like Rabobank were not being respectful and praising New Zealand farmers for what they were doing already. And I went back through the post. I said, oh, it wasn't intended to be like that, Todd. And I went back through the post, and there is a place there where we did mention that, you know, sort of everybody was piling in on farmers, but it wasn't really directed so much at Rabobank. It was just the culminated effect on it. But I can see why he thought we had singled them out. I guess I need a little bit of an apology there, but they were getting lumped in with everybody else at that time. But never mind, it's an interesting exercise, and you certainly find out that even though these people make out that they disregard anything Groundswell's got to say, when it comes to the crunch, they certainly know what's going on and what we're doing. And yeah. I guess I found that out at the Prime Industry Summit, that it always blows me away that people come up and say, good job, well done, and you have absolutely no idea who they are. So I guess we must have made some sort of impact somewhere along the line.
Definitely, very definitely. And as you said, most farmers don't really have an option moving banks. You're just going to go from the frying pan into the fire. They are all on the Net Zero Banking Alliance together, pretty much. But I'll go back to this white paper that Rabobank released, Bryce. And this is something that I've been saying for a while, that I think governments at this point seem to be held hostage to private interests, the banks in this case. And they say in this white paper on maintaining New Zealand's emission edge, they say the election of a new coalition government in October 2023 has addressed some of farmers' concerns with unsympathetic policies, stifling regulations, and with strong indications in coalition agreements of the removal of agriculture from the ETS and part of a move to a lighter touch regulatory regime. So they acknowledge that the new government has come, they are doing this. But then they go on to say, but there are other voices at the table that are getting louder. These are the voices of customers with the increasing expectations of the world's most powerful food processing companies and from investors. This growing web of international obligations, such as the mandatory climate disclosures and the free trade agreements that we've been signed up into NOSAs as, will not afford New Zealand producers the same patience that the New Zealand government has extended them. This was chilling positively to read. This is the bank telling you, if I may put it, and this is just my saying, you don't have to agree to it. They're saying we don't care what a government does. You are answerable to us. This is what we are demanding. Forget what a government is saying. We hold the power here. You will comply. Comply till you die, as I say. This is very chilling to me.
Yeah. Look, Jasper, you've actually reminded me of probably one of the moments at this PINS conference that really hit me. And I'd sort of forgot about it, but they had Nestle and Fonterra people on stage. I apologize, I can't actually remember who else, because these two were the ones that I was really focusing on. And they talked about the fact that this emissions, greenhouse gas accounting for food is not being driven by the consumer. It's being driven by the customer. Mm-hmm. Now, that's really telling, because what that says to you is, we are selling all this food overseas and we want to have a niche market. So we want something that's greener than somebody else's to sell to our consumers. So it's just the customer driven. But, and here's the kicker, the next generation of customer will demand this. the next generation of consumer will demand this. So what does that tell you? That the customer, who is the buyer of our product, is training the consumers of the product to want something. They want to want low carbon food, because they don't want it yet. They're low carbon emissions food, so they don't want it yet. But it is going to come.
Preconditioning.
So these are big companies holding us hostage, because we are not as Kiwi farmers. We, as a dairy farmer, say, you forget you produce the milk, it's in the VAT, it's up to Fonterra to market it or whichever other company of it. So you are, in a way, being a part of a co-op, you are saved from the burden further down the supply chain. But are you really aware of what your co-op is tying you up into, what hoops it's going to get you to jump into? I mean, they clearly, Rabobank just says the New Zealand food and agriculture sector will be well served by reading the economic signals and not listening to the noise from both sides of the government, and by keeping up their focus on reducing emissions despite the current respite you may enjoy from local regulations. I have never seen anything, said more plainly that, forget, the governments do not matter. It is us. It is us who wield the power, and it is us who you're answerable to. And I wonder how many farmers actually realize that. They just get caught up in this tussle between the red and the blue, and they don't look there. But am I being too presumptuous there?
No, most farmers will get hooked up just in exactly that area. You're quite right, Jasper. It's quite scary, isn't it? Because, Rabobank, and you'll probably find it there, they talk quite a bit about the fact that just because these regulations are being pulled back, that doesn't mean that you need to think any way that you can stop or reduce what you're doing. You need to push harder. and that theme comes through loud and clear. And I guess all banks are on that same wagon, aren't they?
They are. They are. People at this point, there's so many who are looking at, there's this methane science examination panel that the new government has set up to see how our targets are set. But the Rabobank white paper says that despite the coalition government's announced review of domestic biogenic methane emission reduction targets to be administered by an independent review panel, this will not change New Zealand's international obligations under the Paris Agreement, nor will it affect the ultimate need for methane reduction as a means of climate change mitigation. So you can set up panels galore. You can submit to primary, and I don't want to sound hopeless and make people think that efforts are not worth it, but we really need to see where else the pressure is coming from. Because the government can just say, well, it's your international markets, we've got nothing to do here. But who were the MFAT negotiators who tied us up into these free trade agreements? Who were the primary industry advocacy bodies who knew this was being signed up, but they didn't make it clear to their members that, hey, from next year, we need more credentials from you?
Yeah. Scary stuff. The other thing is, I don't know whether you want to talk about it, but I was at a Labor Party farmer forum this past week. It was actually on Thursday in Hamilton. Now, this was organised by Federated Farmers, and I thought it was really good in the fact that the Labor Party front bench had admitted they had lost farming and gone off on their own track, and they wanted to know where they went wrong. Wrong person to ask me, I tell you. There was 40 people there. There was most of Federated Farmers hierarchy, like some innovators, the young Maori farmer of the year, Ben Puru, Mike Casey, who of course is the cherry farmer that's all got electricity.
Net zero carbon cherries.
That's right. Kerry Warsnop, of course, who's a Nuffield scholar. So it was really interesting, and they were really genuinely interested because they said they had dropped the ball with agriculture. But one theme that comes through, or something that became very clear, was, and Chris Hipkins talked about it at length, was the fact that they were so busy changing everything in New Zealand. The ministers were so busy, they actually had stopped talking to one another. So there was no safeguards on the Minister for the Environment because everybody else was too busy changing education, changing the health system, changing this, changing that. And the same with the Minister of Agriculture, although he, and I actually talked privately to Chris Hipkins about that later and said that, you know, with such a low standing in his government, agriculture looked like it was not actually worth having around. And, you know, they made all these things happen without even recognising it. Now they're starting to put things together. Whether that'll make them any better next time they get in, and we're all deluding ourselves if we don't think they're going to get in again sometime, that's going to happen. So it was a great opportunity to build some bridges with them and get to know them. You know, our philosophies are different, but the fact that they can admit that they dropped the ball and, you know, did things that they didn't realise they were doing, and now they've got to try and knit things back together again.
Yeah, well, but the issue for me, Bryce, listening to that, is that it's not just that 6 years of the Labor government. It was happening for the 20 years prior, at least since the turn of the century, really. Well, you might go back to the RMA enacting in 91. There's just been this machinery that's just nibbling away at everything we've done and constantly putting us down, and almost like a form of abuse. It is the government's job in this country, in any country, if we're going to be a trading nation, to set the platforms for trade. Having them almost say, look, if you pee this high, we'll promise to pee higher. That seems to be how it is. We've just constantly put ourselves under the pump. And I have no problem with massive drives for efficiency, as free as unsubsidized food production does. You will drive efficiency in your business. And if you leave a few people behind, so be it. We're not all going to be cloned members of the farming state, so to speak. And it disappoints me that the Labor Party would think, and any party would think, that they haven't, that they've got something that can fix the woes of farming. Because actually, the best thing they could do is stay out of our business, do the basics right, and leave us alone. But they can't help themselves. They want to be seen to be doing stuff. They cannot help themselves. And it's at our peril that we actually humour them at all. I'm not saying you shouldn't have gone and visited and talked with them, but That's the problem with evolution, isn't it? We're not around long enough to know what's going to happen next and the influences that we've learned about. We need our successors to understand that this has all happened before and you shouldn't humour it. You should say, go away. But we're a long way from that, aren't we? I think we are.
Yes, we are. And I think all that the Labor government did was actually fast-track something that was coming anyway, and they just didn't take the people with them. Thank goodness for that, because we'd ended up in all sorts of blooming ties and bonds if it had all gone through.
Yeah, look, I had an email from a guy that I hugely respect this week, and you know, as a person that's been at the forefront of emissions nuttiness for 25 years, it staggered me. He said that while I agree that methane is near irrelevant based on the new science you and I and Jaspreet have talked about often, that's not what 95% of the world media is saying. So there's going to be a marketing issue. Well, sorry, doesn't the truth just win easily over all of this?
No, apparently it doesn't. Not.
apparently not. And you know, I'll just reiterate that I have no problem with science delivering us ideas that actually make us better producers, but not if it needs this oppressive legislation disturbing our lives all the time. So I don't know. It disappointed me reading that 95%. As you know, as I just said, 25 years, and you think, I thought people in New Zealand would have known about this for 25 years because it's been in the forefront of my brain. Yes. But apparently not. And all of a sudden now mainstream is, oh, we're catching up, but those farmers are still so damn dirty. They've got to get that profiling sorted. Well, I don't want to be profiled by anyone anymore, anytime. I'm sick of being profiled. So anyway.
Well, those things are going to continue to happen as long as you've got a prime minister or somebody in the hierarchy talking about agriculture being responsible for 50% of New Zealand's emissions.
Yeah. Bryce, I should ask before we let you go, was AgriZero there?
Yes, they were actually.
AgriZero. Yeah, so they've got how many hundreds of millions now, this joint venture between all our, so I must explain for our listeners. So it's a joint venture between banks, most of our primary producers, to decide how to get rid of that pesky methane in this country. They've got hundreds of millions of dollars. So what? Yes. And that's what it is. They've got a job now, and it's hard for them to back off saying methane is non-essential. So what did they say, AgriZero?
Look, I didn't get into it. I've talked to Wayne several times on Wayne McNee, who's the CEO, several times on the phone, and he knows exactly where I sit in all this. So we were just pleasant to one another. We exchanged pleasantries, and I said, have you got anything new that you think's going to be of benefit to New Zealand? And he did say, yes, there's things in the pipeline. I didn't really want to get into a Jaspreet, so I moved on.
It's just coming on too many fronts, isn't it? There's banks, there's AgriZero, there's everyone.
Oh, but Jaspreet, you've missed one key player in that. It's dollar-for-dollar funding with the Crown, with other taxpayers. So taxpayers that are listening to this, you're not, you know, you're putting cash into the farmers' research agencies.
Help us stop, methane, yes,
sir. Great.
Exactly what we need.
We love that co-funding. Keep it coming. Gosh, it's interesting.
That's Don rubbing it in. We don't need better roads or hospitals. We just need urban taxpayers to fund us to help stop methane emissions.
Well, just as long as the government don't turn it back on the farmers and saying they're subsidising us.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. But, you know, better climate, Bryce, everyone gets a better benefit of better climate if more predictable weather patterns. So if Auckland is going to get less rainfall or more predictable weather patterns, why should they not pay for it? Let me play the devil's advocate here. But this is what they are doing. And I think urban New Zealanders should also be, who make up most of our listeners, just because of the profile of the country, they should be up in arms against this, demanding that this is not a good use of taxpayer dollars. This is as unproductive, as inefficient as it gets. We don't need any more money going down the gurgler on this nonsense.
Look, Jaspreet, if most of the urban public knew that what they're looking at predominantly is injections or boluses or something like that going into the animal to control the methane levels. And we've spent time talking to Dr. Jim Gibbs, who's a scientist at Lincoln University, and he tells us that you can try and put any control over the methane in an animal, then you are going to have far more problems producing anything from that animal. So he always claims the best way to do it is make an animal grow as fast as it can. It's on the planet less, and if methane's a problem, that's not,
It's not there for long,
it's not there for long. Yeah, so the inhibitors slow it down. That's exactly what they do. So it takes longer to grow. So in the finish, it all comes out the same. Well, probably not the same, worse. Yeah,
Yeah, look,
interesting.
it's an interesting look. We've had a good old chew of the fat here, and of course, this is only the Rabobank white paper we're talking about. There was the KPMG one recently that actually, if you want to get more upset, read that one. So, look, we should let you go and get on with your day, Bryce. You put a lot of effort into keeping your advocacy group together and making sure you are measured in your response. So great you're putting a little bit of, great you're being listened to by the other side, other media players, and they sort of feeling a little bit of tension. So look, long may you continue to do it. You do put a lot of energy in you and your team, and we're grateful to have you on RCR again today, and I hope our listeners enjoy your candid discussion. Catch you soon.
Good. Thank you very much, Don and Jaspreet. Thanks.
Are you on the RCR mailing list? Never miss a beat of the news and hard-hitting stories you've come to know and love. Stay in the loop. Visit realitycheck.radio/email.